Ambrose challenged the ghost of Andre the Giant because he knew he couldn't beat me. And that's the truth. And on this podcast, you will hear the truth. Not just about the WWE, but about all of professional wrestling. So with that said, sit back, relax, and enjoy yourself for the next hour. Chris Walder, are you ready to talk some professional wrestling?
As always, buddy, and as far as the truth is concerned, hopefully we won't be hearing any R-Truth today.
Global Wars! We're going to talk about that, too!
Going Global Wars, the show you're actually going to be attending.
Well, not Randy, I am. James Warbath here, along with Chris Walder. If you're used to this podcast, you're used to Randy Savage, and he always helps us open up the show. I thought, what a way to start, because Dean Ambrose in the news this week. So Dean Ambrose, the best line of maybe the last 2 years, where he challenged, the only person who could beat him was the ghost of Andre the Giant.
Oh, poor Dean Ambrose, and losing his United States Championship this week. Not a good week.
In fairness, though, keeping with that, the total weight of the Battle Royal, where he lost the U.S. title, was obviously more than Andre the Giant, so Dean still keeping the gimmick alive.
Yes, he is.
Someday, Dean Ambrose versus a hologram of Andre the Giant at a WrestleMania.
Sign me up.
That would be quite interesting. In some ways, the way the WWE goes, I almost would be in favor of a hologram pay-per-view.
Because they love going back in the vault and grabbing all of these old-timer stars. I mean, they can go as far back as they want if they bust out the holograms.
That's right. You know, if it wasn't so darn expensive, what a way to promote the WWE Network. You could have dream matches with holograms on pay-per-view to promote the WWE Network.
Oh, my God. It would probably be better than a lot of stuff we saw this past week, that's for sure. Raw wasn't exactly very interesting.
The pay-per-view, it's funny, I've heard a lot of reviews of the pay-per-view Extreme Rules, and I guess we'll start there. A lot of people like this show, a lot of people were kind of in the middle about this show, and some people didn't like this show much at all. I think the one thing that everyone agrees on is the match that we thought was going to be the main event was not the main event, credit to the WWE there, but the Shield versus Evolution, it delivered, and then some. Although, as much as people like that match, I thought the start to it was very slow. It obviously picked up to be just a wild match and incredible stuff we haven't seen in years in the WWE, in all honesty. A couple of the matches, really with an Attitude Era-esque to them in how they felt, and obviously the Shield and Evolution just went nuts. Seth Rollins, before we ever get to all that stuff outside of the ring, lawn darts himself into the wall. I seriously thought he was knocked out right there, and I was like, oh my God, how are they going to finish this match without Seth Rollins? Apparently not, though. Seth Rollins hard-headed and was able to not only do that, but then dive off the friggin' stands onto, like, a group of people. I mean, all kinds of crazy stuff. The closest thing to Jeff Hardy we have seen in the WWE in quite some time.
That's true, yeah. Seth Rollins really looked like quite the star in that match. I mean, Roman Reigns was obviously the one who looked really damn good at the end when he pinned Batista and got his Superman punch and spear combo in, but like you said, the match did start slow, but that was the case back at Elimination Chamber when the Wyatt family and the Shield went toe-to-toe, and I felt that that was one of the best matches of the year, and Shield and Evolution, in my opinion, surpassed it.
And even Dean Ambrose, in a match like this, his craziness fits right in with all the chaos that was going on. I thought all of the Shield came off looking great, and credit to Evolution for, you know, letting it be that way. I mean, they obviously take the loss in this and really did their part. Once again, Triple H, he's going to lose this whole reputation about burying people, because once again, here's Triple H in a main angle and he's putting over talent. Well, what's going on? The reputation on the internet taking a huge hit for the game.
Yeah, he takes one at WrestleMania. He puts Daniel Bryan over, and then at Extreme Rules, the Shield. And this was the one match on the card. It was a pretty predictable card, but this was the one match that I was kind of wavering on the entire time. But as soon as it went on at 9 o'clock, which was very early, I mean, we both agreed that this was going to be the main event. I kind of figured right away that the Shield were going to go over, which was surprising because I felt that if Evolution went over, it could kind of go into the coming months with the Shield looking to get revenge, but I guess they're going to be going the opposite route now.
And this match, not only was it not the main event, it went on before Cena and Wyatt, which I found surprising as well.
Oh, John Cena. If anything at Extreme Rules disappointed me the most, it was probably that match because they had such a good one-on-one battle at WrestleMania, and I just felt like the steel cage match was a complete letdown.
You see, I'm in the minority here. I didn't mind that match. I thought it worked out pretty well. The one thing that everyone has a problem with is little Johnny who comes out at the end, and I don't even have a problem with that, except for they went one step beyond with the poltergeist voiced. I was like, okay, you've offended me as a wrestling fan. You've taken me out of the believability of this. That was one step too far. I'm not buying the poltergeist voice. But the fact that a little kid was there and was singing the song and John Cena just stopped in his tracks, I thought, yeah, that makes total sense. And it set Bray up for the win, and Bray does get the win, which was obviously important in this feud. I don't see how it could have continued without Bray getting a win.
See that the ending was corny, but that wasn't actually my biggest problem with the match. I think the match went on a little bit too long. I think it clocked in around 22 minutes or so, and I could probably estimate 8 or 9 minutes of the match was just John Cena trying to get over the damn cage, and then Harper and Rowan were cutting him off. When you can just pin the guy in the middle of the ring, like it took John Cena until the end of the match for him to realize that he could just, you know, deliver an attitude adjustment or whatever and get the 1-2-3. But then he was constantly trying to get out, and then the ending when he was trying to walk out outside of the cage, and then little Johnny, you know, obviously John Laurinaitis' son, for the stupid name he got. But it didn't work for me, man.
There's lots of rumors about who this kid is. I've heard a bunch of them. One said it was Bray's son. I don't think that's true.
No, it's not true.
Then there was one. Do you remember Jameson, who used to be with the Bushwhackers?
Yeah.
There's talk that it was his son.
Oh, really?
That seems to be the biggest one out there. But apparently, he is a son of someone involved in the WWE. No shocker there. And I didn't mind that, especially because it didn't continue on. I think if we saw little Johnny come out with the Wyatts on Monday Night Raw, I would have been deeply concerned.
I mean, the way it ended, I mean, it works because it fits Bray Wyatt's persona. You know, he uses mind games and he has the kid come out and to manipulate John Cena. But I really wish that they would have put Bray over in a more, you know, legitimate way. Because I think that this feud is obviously going to go into payback. I mean, we saw on Raw Wyatt cutting a promo and then main event Cena retaliated by himself. But yeah, I just wish there was a more definitive way for Bray Wyatt to look even better. It kind of looks like, you know, it was just like a cheap victory when I wanted him to look a lot better than he did.
And I feel bad for the children that do still follow John Cena, because that means they have to buy these awful lime green John Cena shirts that are just, oh, terrible.
Yeah, and it looks like now, like, people are really starting to like, the talks of John Cena turning heel are really taking a turn now, because the boos are becoming a lot more noticeable, especially when he's cutting these promos. Like, you hear the kids and the women chanting, "Let's go, Cena," and then you hear the male demographic doing the whole "Cena sucks" thing. But it seems to be more along the lines of, you know, there's more booing now than there's cheering. Am I the only one hearing this?
Well, I think it's always been about 60-40 boos, but yeah, the problem is Bray Wyatt's doing such a great job in his role as the heel here, or the babyface, depending on which way you look at this program, and a lot of people are saying, you know what, he's kind of right about this John Cena guy. I think he is kind of fake.
Yeah, the whole gimmick, with Cena, Wyatt is fantastic. I mean, the guy can cut a 5-minute promo and just captivate the audience. But with John Cena, his shtick is getting so damn old. And I've been calling for a heel turn for so long, not because I feel like it's necessary. I just feel like just something needs to change with Cena, because if you go back in the time machine and you go all the way back to WrestleMania 21 or even WrestleMania 20, it's the same damn guy. Like, what's wrong with a little, pizzazz? Just make something different about the guy.
Well, it goes back to what we said about Cena last week. The vulnerability isn't there. Even if we don't get a heel turn, I want John Cena right now to be questioning his whole existence in WWE. Like, if I'm John Cena and this is happening to me and I'm a real person, this is how I feel. I busted my butt for this company for over a decade, and all these people don't appreciate me, and they're booing me. Like, really, why am I doing this? Why am I going through all this? And some credo of hustle, loyalty, and respect isn't enough to me. I think that John Cena should be a very conflicted character. If you don't want to turn him heel, that's fine. But I think we should have almost a summer of him being conflicted on which way he should go.
Well, hopefully this Wyatt promo leads to that, because if this doesn't make that happen, then I have no idea what will.
Yeah, well, the problem is they don't make Cena vulnerable. That's the whole thing. Like he doesn't show any vulnerability. I mean, even the stuff with the kid, it's like, okay, yeah, he sees a little kid and he loses the match, but hey, it's same old John Cena. He's on main event. He's cutting a promo. Yeah, whatever. He's got his new lime green t-shirt, blah, blah, blah. I think the problem with Cena is we've had three guys now that have challenged Cena that have made extraordinarily relevant and real points about John Cena. And those three guys are Bray Wyatt, The Rock, and CM Punk. And I think when you combine all three of them and the stuff they have said, they make for a convincing argument that John Cena is not the guy that you think he is.
Yeah, man, you make great points, but it's just, will they ever pull the trigger on this? And they had such a good opportunity to make him look vulnerable at Extreme Rules, and they didn't do it.
Like, everything about him is plastic. Like, I started up the Condo on the Moon Twitter account, which you should follow, at Condo on the Moon, people, for all our stuff, podcasts, blogs, the whole nine yards, a little promo a go-go mixed in there, but on that site, I follow John Cena. On my personal account, I do not follow John Cena, and I remember why I don't follow John Cena on my personal account, because every tweet he makes is such PC plastic garbage.
Yeah, it's as if someone's doing it for him. Like, it's so contrite.
No, I don't think anyone's doing it for him. I think this is John Cena being that PC plastic guy, because that's the guy we see all the time.
We don't know who the real John Cena is anymore, man. It's just the whole thing's so full of crap, and I'm over it, man. If you can't tell by the tone of my voice or what I'm saying, I'm not a big John Cena guy.
Well, I think we'll end it on this. I think the classic thing of why Cena just irritates people to no end, not this past WrestleMania, but the WrestleMania before that. Most people are familiar with Sam Roberts, who does interviews at WrestleMania and interviews wrestlers throughout the year. And not Sam on Twitter, Opie and Anthony, and then Peter Rosenberg. And he did interviews with those guys. I think it was not this WrestleMania, but the one before that. And he did the corny little joke about the heel turn.
Right.
And then he actually did that on a Raw about a month or two after. And it's like, really? That's your response? Like, turning your friggin' shoe?
Lame.
Exactly. Speaking of lame, let's get to our main event angle for the WWF World Heavyweight Championship. We have Daniel Bryan, who is not lame, but he is booked against the Monster Kane, who, when we talk about people who we are sick of, tired of, and just don't have any belief in, well, here is Kane.
I hate this gimmick with a passion. I hate this whole storyline. The worst thing that ever happened to Daniel Bryan was involving his damn wife. I don't want Brie Bella. She is one beautiful woman, but keep her away from Daniel Bryan. She is bringing this man down to levels that I never thought he could reach. I mean, just take for example this past Monday night on Raw.
Hold on, we got to do this in order because we have the Extreme Rules
match first.
And to their credit, to my dismay, Brie was not involved in that. And I wanted to see both Brie and Stephanie involved. I'm okay with Brie being involved if the goal is to have her involved with Stephanie. But let's get to the actual match that happened at Extreme Rules. And we'll get to a rumor that kind of ties into all of this as well. But we'll get to the match first. I liked the match for Daniel Bryan and Kane. A lot of people didn't. But I kind of liked it because I kind of thought Daniel Bryan got treated like the WWE champion in this. He got into the backstage with Kane and he hopped on the forklift, carried Kane out. I thought it was kind of Austin-like in the sense of Stone Cold Steve Austin. That was an Attitude Era match for Stone Cold Steve Austin with the driving the forklift and all that. It was kind of the same gimmick. Stone Cold wasn't going to get up on top of the forklift and dive and do a headbutt, mind you, but I wasn't as offended by that as some people seem to be. They didn't seem to like that in the backstage brawling. I kind of liked it. We got to destroy a Ford Taurus, too. That's probably doing good for the environment, which Daniel Bryan will endorse. I liked the match. I wasn't hating the match, but I didn't hate the match thinking that the match was a one-off. When we get to Raw, we'll realize it's not. And then the problems begin for me. The match itself, Extreme Rules, Sunday night, if you can take yourself back to the pay-per-view goes off the air, were you as angry about this angle then as you are now, or did Raw make it that you're this angry about this angle?
Yeah, it was definitely Raw that pissed me off the most, but as far as Extreme Rules is concerned, the match was fine. I think that's the biggest compliment I can give it. It was better than I thought it was going to be, but it wasn't anything I'm going to look back on with much, you know, glee and joy. I mean, if that feud ended at Extreme Rules, I think that match would have been a lot better, in my opinion, because then we would have thought, okay, Kane's out of the picture, Bryan moves on to bigger things. The match kind of got slow at certain points, especially when they were backstage, and you know, you couldn't hear the fan reaction, which was kind of crappy. But and then it took them a while to get on the forklift and bring him back out to the ring, and then obviously the big spot at the end, which was spoiled by the fact that everyone saw the two gentlemen sitting ringside with the fire extinguishers, which everyone called on Twitter. And Kane goes through the flaming table. He's not even on fire for half a second, and the guys are already spraying him down. And then he comes back in the ring, gets a knee to the face, and then Daniel Bryan retains the championship. But the show goes off the air with Kane staring him down. He sits up after all of that abuse, and that's how the show ends. But I think based on those spots, you know, and it's nice to see Daniel Bryan not get the CM Punk treatment because, how many shows did Punk do when he was champion and he wasn't in the main event? I mean, I think John Laurinaitis versus John Cena went on after Punk and Bryan at one of these, tweener pay-per-views. So good for Daniel Bryan to get the main event treatment, but definitely Monday Night Raw just sent this this storyline on a downward spiral.
Okay, so we will leave that to the side, the horror movie that is Monday Night Raw, which we'll get to in a moment, but the word being bandied about in most of the rumors and wrestling sites is this: Dave Batista was supposed to be next. Dave Batista said he isn't jobbing to know Daniel Bryan, and hence we get the continuation of Kane and Daniel Bryan. So, I have a problem with this. Dave Batista, who the hell do you think you are? I mean, Triple H, who runs this company and is your boy, and I think everyone would agree is better than Dave Batista, is able to job to Daniel Bryan on the biggest show of the year, but Dave Batista can't job to him on a B-level pay-per-view. What's the problem here? I mean, I made the prediction that Dave Batista is not going to be in this company by WrestleMania 31. I'm going to be right.
Okay, this is where I disagree with you. I understand why Batista had such a problem with this. And let's we forget, he was the one who tapped out to Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania 30. Okay, so we'll start with that. Second of all, the reason he's leaving, or apparently he's not, because he was on Raw this past Monday night, and I think they got him to work through Payback, which was up in the air. But he has his movie coming out in August, Guardians of the Galaxy, where he's this big, I think his name is Drax the Destroyer or something. And I think the reason he didn't want a job to Bryan was because he didn't want to lose to someone that was twice as, you know, that he was twice as big as, two shows in a row, and then leave on that note to promote a movie where he's supposed to look like this total badass. And as well, I mean, we reported at WrestlingRumors.net that there's a lot of superstars right now backstage who are upset with their pay. And Batista is one of them, and apparently he was promised a certain sum that the WWE is not living up to. So I think this is just him venting out in frustration. Obviously, the plans now are for Bryan and Kane to have their rematch at Payback, and we're obviously going to see something with the Shield and Evolution at Payback. But yeah, there's more than meets the eye. There's more than meets the eye to this story.
Yeah, well, obviously there's all that, and Mick Foley was in the news. We talked about that last week. And obviously CM Punk had issues with this going way back to that. But it's just to the point that, I mean, what the heck has the WWE got out of bringing back Dave Batista? I mean, if he's not going to do business and he's not going to play ball, I got news for you. I don't care. Go friggin' promote your movie. Don't come back. You're not doing anyone any favors by being here anyway.
Well, he has all the power now because he doesn't really need the money. I mean, he has a good movie career going for him right now. He's kind of in the same situation where CM Punk was in, where he doesn't have any reason to really stick around anymore. So if he wanted to walk tomorrow, he could do that.
Yeah, but I don't think anyone would miss him. I think people still miss CM Punk, even though people are saying, oh no, everyone's forgot about Punk. You know what? It's a load of crap. If CM Punk walked out at Payback in Chicago, or is it in Chicago? Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's in Chicago.
Yeah, if he walked out at Payback in Chicago, yeah, the place goes nuts. Don't tell me it doesn't. And I mean, even if it wasn't in Chicago, if it was the next one in Battleground, which is in Orlando, the crowd still pops for CM Punk. That's the difference. CM Punk is a bigger star than Dave Batista.
Agreed.
But definitely. Batista doesn't see it that way.
Mm-hmm. Well,
he thinks he's
Batista,
a bigger star.
Yeah, well, because he's in movies and, you know, he's an action film star now, and he has more mainstream popularity than CM Punk did, which I think is hard to argue with, right?
But, truthfully, does he? I don't know. In certain circles, CM Punk is very popular, and I think that the WWE thought Dave Batista was a bigger star than CM Punk. And I don't know if he is.
Well, let's just agree that Batista's return hasn't panned out as they had previously assumed, because the fans were just not into it right from the get-go. We all remember his return on Monday Night Raw. He comes out in the skinny jeans and the white zip-up polo or whatever, and the fans just pooped on him there. Batista, you know, he in his mind, he probably thinks he's a lot more popular than he is, and like you said, the company thinks he's a lot more popular than he is, but he was never really, you know, he was always second or third fiddle to somebody else when he was in the company.
Yeah, I don't understand this. Like someone explained to me where Dave Batista was a big star when he was in this company. He had programs against big-name talents that drew for him. That's what I remember of Dave Batista. Who were his programs against? Oh, against Triple H. Well, yeah, Triple H, he was pretty over. He did one against Rey Mysterio. Well, you know, he had a good angle with that. And Rey Mysterio, I mean, everyone loves Rey Mysterio at that time. And he worked with John Cena. Oh, well, no one likes that John Cena guy. I mean, he hasn't drawn a dime in this business, obviously. You know, I think Dave was carried all the time is my point, but, you know.
No, I agree with you. You know, I think the biggest moment of his career, and it's probably as good as it's ever been for him, was at WrestleMania 21.
Like,
when he had that match with Hunter. Everything else after that, I mean, yeah, he had a good match against, you know, he was involved in the streak, and he dropped the title to Undertaker, but other than that, I can't really think of that one definitive Batista moment, you know, besides him powerbombing Hunter through the table on Raw and doing the thumbs down.
And that was a Hunter moment.
Yeah, exactly.
That was, the moment was Hunter going through the table. It wasn't Batista putting him through the table, if people get my logic there. And we're done with this, and we move on to the second-rate filler that the WWE has tried to make this seem like this was the plan all along. My God. You're not old enough to have experienced 80s horror movies, but this is like not even to that level. I mean, I believe more in Freddy Krueger and Jason than I do in Kane, and this whole camp, like, there's so much wrong with what went on Raw. Let's start with the basic premise that your WWE World Champion is being told what to do by a female and is acting like a total chicken.
Yeah. God, we can go on for hours about how wrong this whole thing is, but the entire segment with him, you know, getting into the car and then having to go back out to the ring, and the fire comes out from Kane, and it culminates with Brie Bella with the worst scream I've ever heard in my entire life. God, that woman should never be an actor, an actress. She was terrible. That scream resonated in my head hours after Raw went off the air. The entire segment sucked. I mean, God, the guy had a cameraman in this car. He didn't realize that there was someone in the back seat with the camera. Like, holy crap. Just like you said, it was like something out of a corny 80s horror film. I hated it. This is the same guy who went into WrestleMania, fought the Authority, defeated Triple H, and then beat Batista and Orton in the main event. And you're telling me that a guy with a damn mask who was wearing slacks 3 weeks ago is supposed to make him a scaredy cat? Give me a break. The entire logic of this thing pisses me off. I'm upset, James. I'm upset.
And Daniel Bryan, oh, by the way, beat the guy clean the night before.
Yeah, exactly.
And the other thing that I'm upset about this, okay, fine, Brie's involved, but why is Brie involved? Brie's involved because she's mad at Stephanie, but we didn't extend that story one damn bit in all of this.
Why is she there? She doesn't need to be there. That's to learn from Stone Cold Steve Austin. Never involve your wife in anything.
Well, no, I get why she's there. She's there to kind of keep Daniel Bryan at bay, because like, if Daniel Bryan's doing this on his own, I don't think he is the scaredy cat. I think he's more scared for his wife than he is for himself, but I don't think that's being illustrated in the storyline well enough to make the fans understand this. And I think you had something with Stephanie and Brie, but if you're not going to go there, then don't tease it. Just like, oh, by the way, we teased this match with HBK and HBK and Daniel Bryan that never happened. Why did we do it? If you're going to tease something, you better damn well go through with it. And they've teased this tension between Brie and Stephanie. Look, if you didn't want to do a match or some kind of program with this, then don't tease it.
It better lead to a match, because I was disappointed when they never had the Bryan and Michaels match, but that was because, I mean, I didn't really, you know...
I'm not saying it's on the same level here. I mean, yeah. Stephanie versus Brie is nothing compared to Daniel Bryan versus HBK,
yeah.
But at the same time, my God... Oh, by the way, we'll just touch on this briefly since we mentioned him. HBK was on JR's podcast breaking some news about the Undertaker's streak. And,
right, I heard that.
Yeah, 4 hours before the time it happened is when the actual decision was made, and clearly from Shawn Michaels' comments, made by one man named Vincent Kennedy McMahon.
Came down to the wire, eh? I guess they had no clue what they were going to do last second with Lesnar going over Undertaker. I mean, I forget what... Michael's okay with this? I mean, this is a guy who lost twice to Undertaker, and now he sees Lesnar be the one.
Well, Shawn took the, I'm taking the high road, I'm retired, I like my life, living on my farm, doing my hunting. None of this concerns me. But yet, being Shawn Michaels, did actually drop this information. And really, JR did not lead into this line of questioning. All he asked was, were you surprised that the streak ended? To which Shawn Michaels volunteered the information that he was at Gorilla with, assumedly, Triple H and Vince when all of this went down.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, man, it was a good moment, you know. It shocked the world, but the fact that it happened 4 hours before the match, that they actually came to the conclusion that Lesnar was going to win, that's actually pretty surprising.
Shawn Michaels is the best guy in the world at keeping himself relevant, even when he doesn't even care if he's relevant.
Oh, he'll be a special guest referee at some point this year.
Well, yeah, because they always call him, and they beg him to come, and he does a good job of being at a distance from wrestling, but always able to come in at a moment's notice.
That's a good thing with him, you know?
He is the total opposite of Mick Foley. How yeah. Mick Foley handles business and how Shawn Michaels handles business?
Yeah, it's night and day.
The complete opposite ends of the spectrum. It is... Well, and too, let's be honest. Shawn Michaels' best friend is the guy who's second in command running this company, married to the woman who is probably... If Hunter isn't second in command, she certainly is. So he does have some ins in this company.
So Brie Bella versus Stephanie with Shawn Michaels as guest referee at SummerSlam. Let's do this.
Wow.
You heard it here first, folks.
Is Shawn going to wear the really short shorts? Because he has to, right?
An oldie but a goodie.
Yeah, wear the really short shorts. That would be great.
Oh, my God. What am I booking here?
I don't know. That was crazy booking. But I the scary thing is I kind of dug it. Anyway, what else?
Hey, speaking of booking, before we get off the topic of Brian and Kane, it looks pretty much penciled in now that for Payback, it's going to be a buried alive match for the WWE Championship. What do you think about that?
I'm okay with it because it means Kane's going away.
he's doing promotion this summer for See No Evil 2, so that would be a good way to write him off.
In fact, no, let's just write him off, period. Let's just say
his last match.
Congratulations on your future endeavors. We hope to you have a long, successful life as a libertarian politician, and good luck with that.
The guy's in two straight main events, and you're just going to release him.
What? Wow. Yeah, when you think of it in those terms, that makes it all the more scary, doesn't it?
Exactly.
All right, let's talk about a guy who hopes to be in main events in the future. Certainly everyone thinks he will be. That is Antonio Cesaro.
Oh, it's just Cesaro now.
Well, whatever.
I know you like calling him.
I'm not into that whole garbage. I'll talk about Big E Langston later too, folks.
They actually took the Alexander out of Rusev as well.
Yes, everyone is one name now. Oh, Madonna God. Is appearing at WrestleMania 31. Spoiler alert.
they'll do the opposite treatment with Sting when he comes in. They'll call him Steven Sting when he comes in.
Probably not. But anyway, Cesaro, Antonio Cesaro, however you would like to refer to this man, he is with the one in 21-1, Paul Heyman, and pretty successful outing at Extreme Rules. I thought great way to go with it, go the obvious, give him the win. RVD, boy, oh boy, did he take a beating in that match.
Yeah, that's for sure. You know, and he took the neutralizer on the garbage can. He took some sick bumps during the match as well. But yeah, the right guy went over. I almost thought that Jack Swagger had a chance to win. God, I was wrong. Because I thought maybe they would debut whoever the new Real American was, because I think Coulter was teasing that on Twitter that he was going to bring somebody in, and maybe Extreme Rules was a good chance to do it. But yeah, the right guy went over. Cesaro has all the momentum right now, and yeah, definitely beating RVD, who's an enhancement talent at this point. He's not really going to be a threat to win a lot of matches, and then taking out his old partner and Swagger. Yeah, good for Cesaro.
If there is a new Real American, that means Jack Swagger. You are heading to the unemployment line.
Definitely.
Sorry to point that obvious fact out, but it certainly seems that way. Jack Swagger, and not in any good way, shape, or form. But the WWE would be foolish to get rid of this gimmick and get rid of Zeb. Zeb, let's talk about him on Raw. We're jumping around a little bit, and I apologize. But
that's what we do here.
But the debut of Adam Rose, which I thought was very underwhelming.
Yes.
I expected much bigger, grandiose things for this entrance. And I can't remember who said it, and I really want to give them credit, but I honestly can't remember who said it. But they said it perfectly. when you work in that NXT environment, it's a very small environment. It's about 400 people, and things look much larger in that NXT arena than they do when you come to that main stage of the WWE. And that was never more evident than with Adam Rose's entrance, because it was the same exact entrance he does at NXT, the difference being his little posse or entourage from his bus looks awfully small in that WWE environment, and it just didn't have the same feel to it. That said, I love the bunny. I follow the bunny on Twitter. I don't know if it's really him, but I want to believe it is. At WWE_bunny, follow him. He's awesome. And that being said, Zeb, the facials he made were the only thing about this segment I liked. He was tremendous.
Yeah, I mean, I had high hopes for Adam Rose. I'm a big fan of his. NXT, he was tremendous, and I agree with your points that, you know, the Full Sail University makes things look a lot bigger than they really are.
Well, Emma's the other example. Emma was nothing but an entrance. I mean, some people like her in-ring work. I'm not a big fan of it. I think she gets over for an entrance, and Adam Rose, I think the same thing. Adam Rose in the ring, we haven't seen it yet in WWE, but I got news for you. It ain't all that great.
You're not a fan of, you know, with the stuff he did as Leo Kruger?
Oh, no, I think he was terrible as Leo Kruger. I think the remake was necessary, but even with his wrestling as Adam Rose, with all the kind of stuff they've added to this character and his moveset, I don't like it. I don't think he's a good in-ring worker.
Yeah, he doesn't have a definitive moveset yet. I mean, he's bounced around with a couple of finishers now. He had like a choo-choo clothesline and off the top rope kind of elbow axe handle kind of move, but I mean, the jury's still out. I think the crowd was completely done by the time Adam Rose came out. I think if he debuted during the first hour of Raw, I think the reaction would have been a lot better. I think they need to fix the camera work. I don't think, and I mean, I went to school for this, the camera work could make or break this, especially with the entrance, with all of the people there. I think they need to have it a lot lower to make it look bigger than it is. I think, you know, with the entrance way for the WWE Raw, it looks a little, it looks wonky, so to speak. But, yeah, I mean, I want to see what they do over the next couple of weeks. We're probably going to get Adam Rose versus Swagger at Payback, and then we'll see there for sure if this guy's a real deal or not.
They need more people. Like, I get what you're saying. I went to school for this stuff too, and there is ways you can shoot stuff and get away with it. But at the end of the day, you're going to have your two shots of the match with those people out there, and it's going to dawn on people, hey, there's not really that many people there. You need, like, they need to come off that bus and then, like, people come from the outside, from the street, and just join the party. And by the time he friggin' gets to the ring, it's like a lumberjack match because you've got all these friggin' freaks around the ring. Like, it's got to be like that. And that's the thing. If you remember, a long time ago, I think we talked about this on this podcast when we first saw the Adam Rose gimmick. And I said, I don't know how you do this on the main roster because I think you need so many people to pull it off, and I don't see how you can get those people week in, week out to get that many people. I mean, obviously, it's usually a bunch of indie workers and people that aren't working for WWE and stuff like that. The bunny could be Zack Ryder for all we know, but the point is you need so many people for this gimmick to come off how they want it to come off.
Unless they just switch the entrance entirely and just have kind of like a Del Rio thing where they drive the bus out to the arena and then you just see all the people just start flooding out and Adam Rose is the last one, because, you know, if this entrance starts to flop, I think that could be the route they start to go.
They don't have a bus, though. They just rented a bus at WrestleMania. That's the problem.
Oh, I thought, didn't they have like an actual bus that they have with them, or did they just store stuff in there or something?
No, that's just kind of like a fluke. Like, I think they rented a bus for the weekend at WrestleMania and taped all those vignettes.
Oh, okay.
And they put, like, you know how you can put that, like, sticker stuff on the bus, and so it looks like it's all painted up? I think that's how they did it.
Oh, okay.
Don't quote me on that, but I don't think there is an actual bus.
Well, that sucks.
It does. Everything about this gimmick is not coming off as planned.
But it has to be potty time all the time.
I do like the character. I do like the gimmick, but I just once it gets in ring, I mean this is the entrance was the big thing. I mean, you know, if we can't get past the entrance, I don't know where we're going with this.
Yeah, I want to see him wrestle a match, and the entrance is what makes him so damn cool. But
all I have to say is if you're Bo Dallas, you're shaking right now.
Why would he be shaking?
Because a lot of these debuts are not going so well.
Well, unless you're, Paige, right?
Well, that didn't really go so well either. She does have the Divas title, but really, how was she booked in the last little while? Not so good. Wasn't on Raw at all. And her match with Tamina Snuka got fed up halfway through and is asking the audience, well, what the hell do you expect us to do? Really? That's really professional, Tamina. Congratulations.
She did not do that.
She did.
That was caught on camera?
I don't know if it was caught on camera, but I heard she was not too happy with the fact the audience was chanting boring and basically addressed it during the match.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a big no-no. I can't believe she did that.
That happened. And then, and you've got Paige, who, again, looks like the weakest champion ever right now. Because she's not... The girl she won the title off of isn't around to be upset about it. And the people they're booking her against aren't the top people that you think of when you think of the Divas division.
Because there's no real heels in the division besides AJ. And Tamina is just there to buy time until AJ returns. Who else are you going to throw her against? You have to have her face the Alicia Foxes and the Oksanas of the world. You're not going to throw her in the ring against Eva Marie, because that would be a disaster. And all the Total Divas are basically faces. So what else can you do?
Here's the thing, though. I don't think you need a face heel in this. I think, regardless, if you're good or bad, you're pissed off that Paige is the Divas champion. If I'm Natty Neidhart, who is the classic babyface of the Divas division, I'm in this company working my butt off. I'm on Total Divas. I'm doing all this stuff. And this girl comes in off NXT and friggin' wins the Divas title? Really?
I don't know. Is that the way the WWE would see it, though? They're not really big on that.
No, but that's what I'm saying. That's the motivation. This girl came in from like the developmental system and punked the entire Divas division. I don't think you need to be a babyface or a heel to be upset about that.
Well, I think we can agree that the division probably does need a heel back in the mix if AJ doesn't come back. And it looks like they're going to be giving Flair's kid a good push in developmental. Maybe she'll be brought up soon and we can see some matches. And I'm still hoping we get Emma versus Paige on Raw. Say what you will about her gimmick, but those two can put on quite a hell of a match.
I don't know. I don't think it'll play out well, but she needs something. Like, Paige is a tremendous worker. She's much better than what you've seen on Raw. And this girl needs something, like a life preserver something.
Yeah.
Like, throw this girl a bone, please, WWE, because you're going to have her for a long, long time. And, you know, first impressions are lasting impressions. And right now, the first impression she's making is a terrible one.
She's a lot better than what we've seen.
She is, but that's... If you know her from NXT, you have a much different opinion than if she was thrown on your television screen beating AJ Lee. And I'm trying to look at it from those people's perspective.
Maybe NXT isn't the greatest thing anymore because of all these people that are coming up. And maybe they should really start thinking about moving it out of Full Sail and get some larger crowds. And then maybe we could get a better understanding of how these people would translate on the main roster. Because I think you're bringing up some good points about how most of these debuts have been real flops.
I think they need to tour more. I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
Like, I think... Like, not just the little loop they do in Florida. I'd like to see them kind of, like, when the WWE does live events, kind of attach NXT to it. Like,
right.
Have, okay, well, here's your live event, and we also have three matches featuring talent from NXT, and put them in front of that WWE audience that way, and you get a good idea of where you're at with people.
it would be nice if they just started taping NXT before SmackDown or something. You know, get rid of the main event and just turn it into NXT.
No, no, I think they're fine with Full Sail and all of that. I think it's a good place to go learn, but there has to be a step in between that isn't there. You can't.
Yeah, well,
they do
the live shows though. Not in front of big crowds, maybe like a couple hundred. But.
Yeah, but they usually call them up and they put them like against WWE people. What I'm saying is have that learning process come to that as well. Like
right.
If you have two talents that you think are ready, let's have them do a couple loops working not a WWE talent but one of the NXT talents.
Yeah.
And see how the crowd reacts to both NXT talents. Because I think when you put them against a WWE talent, you get a different reaction. Because they'll always react to the person that they know. If you have two people they don't know, then you're forcing them to choose.
Yes.
So there we have it.
There you go.
So my free advice for the WWE, like they take it, and like they even are listening to our podcast, maybe someday they will.
One day they will, and they'll enjoy it just as much as all of our listeners.
Let's hope so. We're doing well on the Twitter though. We're almost up to 200, so that's good stuff.
Yes.
We're moving up the Twitter rankings, you know, so that's good. Anyway, anything else that stands out from Extreme Rules and Raw for you? I think we covered all the main things. Oh, you did mention Rusev. He of course had his beat down. He's moved to Russia. Lana now loves Vladimir Putin. my God. Like, talk about the most messy booking of an angle I have ever seen from the WWE. This is friggin' it.
Well, because they finally realized that with Lana being from Russia and Rusev being from Bulgaria, it was just so random that now they kind of had... It forced their hand, and now he has to reside from Russia. And, yeah, I mean, I don't remember a damn thing about what he did at Extreme Rules with R-Truth and Xavier Woods. I thought he'd put his accolade on both of them at the same time. That never happened, so...
No, he took Woods out before the match even began.
Yeah, so it wasn't even a handicap match. You're right. It was like, okay, he disposed of one of them, and then the match was him against R-Truth. Wow,
I will say there was one thing I did like about that match. Lana. I liked how he... No, I'm not as into Lana as everybody else. I get it. She's hot and all that. But, no, my thing in that match, he took the ring apron up, and he smashed Woods' head right into the edge of it. I thought that was a great spot.
Yeah, that looked like it hurt, yeah.
Like, that is something I haven't seen anyone ever do.
Right.
And I mean, we've seen TNA fool around with pulling up the ring and stuff like that, but in WWE, I've never seen anything like that. I thought it was a brilliant spot. Not that many people were paying attention to that, because, like all of... the rest of the people, you are just focused on Lana, and that's a problem.
It's hard not to be.
I mean, this is a, I've mentioned this, and I think it's bang on. We are called Savage's Condo on the Moon. This is when Randy Savage debuted. Mm-hmm. But the difference is Randy Savage was so charismatic and would not allow himself to be pushed to the background. But when Randy Savage came out, it was two different pops, because it always was the same when Savage came out. Elizabeth would come out first, just like Lana does. Crowd would cheer, they'd go nuts, and then Savage would come out, but they'd boo Savage, and Savage, any attention that was paid to Elizabeth, he would freak out. And that's how he got his heat. There's no connection between these two where there's the heat. I think Rusev needs to have some connection to Lana in the way that he gets upset that she's getting all this attention.
Well, then they should just reveal that they actually are dating in real life.
Are they really?
They are.
Wow, that is one of those couples that makes you go, hmm?
Okay.
That's wow.
Yeah, I had that confirmed this week that, yeah, they're getting it on.
Wow.
Good for you, Rusev.
I'm speechless.
Attaboy.
I don't know if I can go on with this podcast. I really don't. How does that happen?
Oh, I don't know, man. There's someone out there for everybody.
Like,
if only everyone had a Lana.
I mean, jeez. I don't know where to go. CM Punk, I know, can beat the entire Divas division, but Alexander Rusev?
He must be like a playboy behind the scenes or something.
I have no idea.
It must be the hair.
I don't know. We could go a lot of directions with this, but we won't. So we'll just leave it at that. That was shocking news, though.
But to answer, I mean, you said it earlier here. Like, is there anything else that you noticed about Raw or Extreme Rules?
Oh yeah, I did say that, and then you just floored my world with Rusev dating Lana. I'm like, wow, really?
But it was kind of like it was that 2-night span with both shows where I feel like I could have just not watched either show and I probably wouldn't have missed a lot. That's the thing that I was always worried about with these special events now on the WWE Network is like, are they really going to put their best foot forward? Because now they have everyone's money ahead of time. They don't really have to go out of their way to impress anybody anymore.
And, you know, under the old system, would they really have gone 3 matches, 3 different pay-per-views, special events with John Cena and Bray Wyatt? Maybe. Would they have gone that far with Shield and Evolution? I don't know. Would they have done a rematch with Daniel? Well, they weren't going to do that. So, but like these extending feuds longer than they need to go.
Yes.
And with all the television time that you have to use in between that, I mean, you get so burnt out on these matchups and these interactions that it's like, I mean, it's people say that wrestling fans today, they don't have patience. I don't know if that's necessarily true or fair, because when you look at the wrestling landscape, it's totally changed. Like, take an example of Savage Steamboat, which was the big feud going into WrestleMania 3. That feud played out over about 6 months, but you were able to build it over that time because there wasn't as much television. Savage had a match on Superstars where he initially smashes Steamboat's throat. Steamboat goes out on the stretcher holding his throat. We get the update the next week. Oh, Steamboat, we don't know if he's ever going to wrestle again and blah, blah, blah. His medical situation, he's out for like over a month. He comes back unexpectedly on a Saturday Night main event. Like, there's hardly any TV to fill, so they were able to drag that story out for 6 months. You couldn't do that today.
It's almost as if the WWE now is putting more of an emphasis on their television than they are their pay-per-views or their special events. And I feel like, I mean, Payback is going to be just a retread of what we saw at Extreme Rules. We're going to get a lot of rematches, probably. And I think fans are just going to become so tired of these feuds because they're going to want something different. But then the WWE, like I said, has everyone's money. They can just continue stretching these things out. Like, I mean, with John Cena and Bray Wyatt, there's rumors out there that we're going to get a Last Man Standing or an I Quit match between the two in Chicago, and then they might actually extend that going into SummerSlam. It's been a great feud. It's probably been the best feud of 2014, but holy crap, fans get bored so easily with things because they always want something different, the WWE might not understand that.
If you do an I Quit match, you're done. You can't continue a feud after that.
Unless they have some sort of freaky damn child choir thing again, where Bray Wyatt gets beats around the rules or something. I don't
know. Little Johnny can imitate John Cena.
Yeah, he does a Cena impression. Because I quit into the microphone.
But the point I'm making is there's so many hours of television now for the WWE compared to back in the old days.
Yes.
You have a 3-hour Raw. You have a 2-hour SmackDown. You have main event. You have, God, you even have these superstars and stuff that no one ever even watches. I mean, back in the old days, when I was a kid, it was 1 hour on Saturday, man. You had superstars, and then like every 2 months, you got the Saturday night's main event, and you had a pay-per-view every 3 months. Now, we have 13 pay-per-views. We have like over 10 hours of television a week, not to mention your reality show, Total Divas, and all this other stuff, and it's just, it's so hard to keep an angle going over that time. I mean, there's lots of tricks on how you keep angles going, but eventually you run out of all of them.
It's too much, man, it's too much, and that's why I still feel that Raw needs to be cut down, reduced to 2 hours again, because like, I mean, I was watching Raw on Monday night, and I just struggled to keep my head up. I mean, I love wrestling. I love WWE. But, my God, I cannot keep my attention span on the product for 3 hours unless it's captivating from start to finish, which it never is.
Wow. Just, I thought you had another point, but you did not. That was it. It never is. It sometimes is, but very rarely. But as I am about the WWE product, I don't know if you've noticed the just up tone to my voice this week. I'm happy. I'm excited. And you know why that is, Chris Walder?
Because you're going to a certain Ring of Honor event this weekend.
That's right. Global Wars going down this Saturday. Sold out Ted Reeve Arena. The main event, Adam Cole versus my guy Kevin Steen. I love both of these guys. I'm really excited to watch these two go at it. And they've went at it, obviously, many times in other promotions. But I think just two of the top talents in that promotion, and really excited for that. Most people are excited for all the New Japan matches we're going to see, and all the Japanese guys coming in. But Ring of Honor, for whatever reason people are going, this is a big time for this promotion right now. I mean, these two shows back to back. We've got Toronto, and then we've got New York City, which will be next week. We'll talk about that, obviously, on the podcast next week with the New Japan co-promotion, and then heading to pay-per-view on June 22nd. Boy, oh boy, this feels like a big time for Ring of Honor, and I just love so many of the people that are part of this promotion. I think 2 to 3 years from now, a lot of these guys could be making up the WWE roster, or at least part of the NXT roster, because I think they are that good, and I think it begins and ends with their world champion, Adam Cole. This guy is 24 years old, and you just wouldn't know it. I mean, he's so talented at what he does, and just a great heel world champion that they have in that promotion. He has made that turn from being the classic baby face that everyone loved to the most hated and despised guy in that company, and he's done it flawlessly, and I think he's a tremendous worker.
And me and you talked about this before that we started the podcast here, but when you mentioned that there's like 3, 4, 5 guys on the roster that you think could realistically wind up on a WWE or NXT roster, which guys were you referring to there?
I think Adam Cole, definitely, because he's 24 years old, as I mentioned, and he's only going to get better. I think the evolution of Bray Wyatt has opened a door for Kevin Steen to be accepted in the WWE, because Kevin Steen obviously does not fit the quote-unquote mold for what a WWE superstar is.
That's for sure.
But neither does Bray Wyatt. And if you look at Kevin, he has put the work in, and he's not going to win a bodybuilding competition anytime soon, but he looks in a lot better shape. He's always been able to go in the ring. That's never been a question with him. And he just has a connection with that audience in Ring of Honor that is tremendous. I mean, Kevin Steen to me, and this is going to sound like an odd comparison, but I will flush it all out for you and make it make sense. He is the John Cena of ROH. And he's nothing like John Cena, I get that, but he is treated like John Cena is. But the difference is the ROH fans accept that he's treated like John Cena is. When Kevin Steen is on a card for Ring of Honor, whatever match he's in is the co-main event. Every single time. The title is booked as it should be, as the last match. But Kevin Steen and whoever he is dealing with, 9 times out of 10, is the co-main event for that show. Because he's just such a draw for that company, and he has such a connection with that audience that has built over the last 2 years. I mean, this event used to be called Border Wars, and he won the ROH title there a couple years ago. And I think his rise from that moment to where he's at now has been tremendous. I mean, he has literally been the star of that company.
We've seen the rumors about him possibly getting some NXT tryouts and whatnot. I'm a little worried about how WWE would use him and handle him. I mean, I don't know if he's just kind of like better off staying in Ring of Honor because he's so over with that crowd and he's so appreciated that I'd rather him stay there. But
it's a money thing at the end of the day, right? Because WWE is going to have more money at the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean, if NXT or if they offered him a spot on the main roster right away, he'd be crazy not to take it.
But well, no one's getting that anymore, though.
Yes.
Like Adam Cole, whoever comes from ROH, I don't care who they are. You're going through developmental. I mean, even there's rumors that the star from Japan, who is it, Kenta, has been signed by the WWE. He's probably going through developmental. He doesn't need to, but he's going to.
Just to understand their... because the WWE has a completely different style than Ring of Honor. Ring of Honor, they're a lot more loose, and they let you do more of what you want to do. But, I mean, you're never going to see Steen do the package pile driver in NXT.
No. Well, that's the one thing about Kevin Steen that will be interesting, because I think his entire moveset he can't use.
He had F5 there for a bit, too?
The Sank 5, that even with the French name, I think people will know that's Brock Lesnar's move.
Yeah.
He uses the crossface, which is a no-no in WWE for obvious reasons. That would be the one thing that... And I'm sure Kevin's thought about it. He's not a dumb guy. I'm sure he has a plan in place for if he gets that call... what he's doing with himself. And, you know, I mean, it almost would have been nice from his perspective if he had lost his feud with Mike Bennett and lost the package pile driver.
It would have been more beneficial for him. But
yeah, because he could have tried using something else and worked with it. But
he's well-rounded enough that he can adapt and come up with something new on the fly, and he'll be fine.
Yeah, and I think Mike Bennett's another guy who I know a lot of people don't like Mike Bennett. I don't understand why. But I think he's a guy that, you know, he could make it to this company. He's got the talent. He's obviously got, you know, skills. And of all the people in Ring of Honor, he works one of the closest to WWE style. I think Adam Cole does too in the proper match and the proper setup. But he's one of those guys that I think wrestles closer to a WWE style right now.
Yeah, I can agree with you on that. And then, if he can bring Maria with him, I think that would be even more beneficial for him.
That's a problem, though.
I know Maria had her beef with the Bella Twins, but that seems to be under the bridge now.
Who knows? But, I mean, but there, obviously, at some point, if all the stars align and a CM Punk comes back in this company... Boy, oh boy, there's a feud there that the internet knows about that would be awfully fun to watch. Let's just say that.
It would be. And you're always praising the podcast that they do, right?
Yeah, I listened to it this week. Actually, Adam Cole was on there with both of them, and I thought Adam Cole represented himself very well. Here's the thing, and this is the thing why I like Adam Cole, and it came up in this interview. He's already starting to think on those next levels. He was talking about he doesn't even study wrestling anymore. He studies life. And what he means by that is he studies characters in life and how he can apply them to wrestling. And I've heard some of the great minds in this business talk in those terms. Stone Cold Steve Austin, the idea of that character... with Stone Cold watching a real-life killer on TV and seeing how he could translate that into a wrestling character. It's stuff like that. When you can take outside of the wrestling bubble and bring it into it, it's a beautiful thing if you do it correctly. Not like how TNA does it, where you absolutely rip it off and bring it into the wrestling bubble. But when you can say, yeah, I'll take a little bit from that person, a little bit from that person, a little bit from over there, and create a character out of that. And he's already thinking in those terms, and that's at 24 years old. I think that's amazing.
Well, I agree with you. That's a guy I would definitely love to see on WWE programming one day. And just to tie off what you said with TNA ripping off everything, and we're not going to go in depth on this, I just wanted to bring it up. They have a faction coming in now called the Menagerie or something.
Yes.
With Nux. And yeah, I mean, if that wasn't a cheap attempt at trying to get a Wyatt family pop, I don't know what is.
I don't know if it's a ripoff of the Wyatt family or the Oddities, but there's also there's also a guy in it named Crazy Steve, who apparently is actually an indie wrestler from up here in Ontario named Crazy Steve. So there.
And they found some work for Rob Terry. Mr. Yeah. Can't get released for some reason.
Yeah, working under a mask. I don't know what that says about him.
That is until Mason Ryan gets signed.
Apparently he doesn't have those Rusev looks.
He doesn't have the Rusev charm either.
I don't know what's going on with that company. That's why we don't talk about it that often on here.
That's how sad it is, though. I feel like we should be talking about them, but they just keep pooping the bed so much that, and that's why we bring up Ring of Honor more, because they're doing everything right, and that's what TNA isn't doing.
Well, and the other thing that I think about Ring of Honor, and I think it's fairly obvious to anyone who's paying attention. Ring of Honor is a pathway to the WWE. TNA is not a pathway to anywhere other than TNA.
Definitely.
And that's the thing. If you look at the wrestling business, and I think anyone who doesn't look at the wrestling business like this is being delusional, it begins with the WWE, and it filters down from there. It's great to love all kinds of wrestling. It's great to go out to independent shows, which I'm also doing too, actually. I'm going to Alpha One's show on Sunday after Global Wars, which is here in Hamilton, and some of the ROH guys are coming down for that. It should be fun. But it's great to support wrestling on all levels, but you have to understand the hierarchy of it. And I think TNA is a plateau on that level. It doesn't get you to the top. It gets you to, like, AAA baseball. Are you okay with...
Yeah, the only pathway to TNA is from the WWE unemployment line, unfortunately.
Yeah, or you like, here's the thing. I don't know the money specifically for wrestlers between TNA and ROH. The common belief is ROH doesn't make as much as TNA, although with all their cuts that might have changed. But let's assume TNA does pay a little more. Is it worth it taking that little more of cash and not having that end of the rainbow shot at the WWE? Not for me if I'm a wrestler.
That's why you'll never see Bobby Roode or James Storm or Austin Aries on WWE programming.
Well, I mean, look, AJ Styles, where did he go? He went back to ROH. I mean,
yeah.
Chris Hero, he's in ROH. I mean, any significant talent that TNA releases is not getting picked up by WWE. They're having to go back on the indies, and they usually end up in ROH because ROH is pretty much the standard for all of the promotions below TNA and WWE. And I think with ROH going to pay-per-view, that's coming June the 22nd, I think TNA's whole world is about to get rocked, because I think ROH is going to do very well on pay-per-view. I think they're going to challenge TNA's numbers, and TNA, unlike ROH, does not have a secure future with their television. Spike TV could decide that they want to do a Bar Rescue Marathon instead of Impact, and it's all over. Basically speaking, it just makes sense to be in ROH to me over TNA, and TNA's future may be in serious doubt.
Yeah, I can't wait to see. They're probably released, but I don't know what the numbers were for TNA Sacrifice, and I wonder if ROH, their first pay-per-view, will come close to that.
I think they'll beat it. I really do. I think they'll beat it, especially if they get it worked out. They can have it here in Canada as well, because I think Toronto's a really strong market for them. Obviously, they've sold out an event coming up here on Saturday, and they always do well in Toronto. That would help push their number, and I just think people have given up on TNA.
A lot of us have, me and you especially.
Well, no, it's not just us. I mean, honestly speaking, like from a pure business point of view, if I felt that it would help this podcast get more listeners by talking about TNA, we would. I don't think it will.
You're right. No one really cares to talk or mention TNA's existence anymore because their programming is just, it's not entertaining anymore. And I this is coming from someone who used to throw down $30 back in, you know, 08 and 09 for TNA pay-per-views because I actually liked when they started bringing in these old WWE guys. You know, I was a big supporter of, you know, Kurt Angle coming in, and then they had Jeff Hardy come back and Rob Van Dam, and I was like, all right, this is pretty cool. But then everyone was just being utilized so poorly, and then the Hulk Hogan thing was just a disaster. So it's like, okay, I hate being disappointed. So why would I keep investing myself into your product when I know you're going to let me down? And that's like, for example, when they had Eric Young recently become their World Heavyweight Champion. It was a cool moment because I dig Eric Young, but at the same time, it's like he's not the right guy to be champion, and I know they're going to drop the ball down the road anyway. So it's like, okay, I care now, but I'm just going to withhold my emotion so I don't care anymore because I like being happy.
And I think this could have came for ROH sooner than it has, because I think if they had not had all their issues with iPay-Per-View, they were putting on a tremendous product back then when they were having all the problems with iPay-Per-View. The problem was they pissed off the wrestling community with having all the issues with iPay-Per-View, and a lot of people said screw ROH, even though it was producing some great stuff. I mean, that was the time that Kevin Steen took that belt and started to have his big run as the champion. And that's what got me into ROH initially. I thought it was a tremendous product from that point on, and I don't think that's changed. It's only gotten better. And now the fact, you mentioned TNA, the price point that ROH has put this at too, they're cheaper than TNA on pay-per-view. That's going to help them.
What was the price again?
It's going to be, well, American, it's going to be 24 or 29, something like that. I forget. There's a price for HD. There's a price for your regular standard. But it's under $30. I do know that. In Canada, it might be a little bit more once they get viewer's choice and all that. But still, cheaper than TNA, and the quality compared to what we saw at Extreme Rules, not that dissimilar. Now, production quality and all that is an issue for ROH, and that's something they've said we're aware of and we're going to address, and we'll see when their pay-per-view rolls out on June 22nd how successful they are at that. They're obviously not going to reach a WWE level, might not even reach a TNA level, but if they make efforts and changes, I think people are willing to, you know, deal with less glitz and glamour if they get a good product in the ring.
We'll probably get a better start-to-finish show at the ROH pay-per-view than we got, definitely at TNA Sacrifice, and maybe even from Extreme Rules, because the only match that I really cared to watch again was Shield Evolution, and ROH has a reputation for having matches be great from the beginning of the card to the end of the card. So I'm actually looking forward to this ROH pay-per-view. It's a shame that I wasn't able to attend. It's a different thing, sorry. But I'm definitely going to be ordering the ROH pay-per-view, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, you can get an iPay-per-view for the show I'm going to be at and the New York show. So if you're willing to take the gamble on iPay-per-view, and they have changed now, it's going to be on Ustream, the same place that New Japan uses. New Japan seems to have no issues with this, so fingers crossed, it should be all right to get on iPay-per-view through Ustream, and I think you can already get that now. So,
and then maybe I'll see your mug there in
maybe,
the crowd, cheering on your boys, Cole and Steen.
Maybe. I'm going to be torn in that match because I like both of those guys. So
it's a win-win for you, then.
Yeah, it is, but it someone has to lose, and that's sad for me.
The match is going to be good.
It will be. It'll be tremendous. There's no question. Some of the best matches you get in wrestling is when the two competitors are legitimately friends outside of the ring. Adam Cole and Kevin Steen are great friends. They obviously make up half of Mount Rushmore in PWG, so they get along, they're great friends. I think it'll be a great match. It was Kevin Steen's birthday this week, by the way.
No,
so happy birthday to Kevin Steen, and he has a new daughter, which we talked about, so life's going good for Kevin Steen, and I think life is going well for ROH as well. And we'll see how they do with the iPay-per-views and all of that. And incidentally, once they are on pay-per-view as well, they're still keeping with the iPay-per-views, so you'll be able to see it either way. So if you're so inclined and you're comfortable with iPay-per-views, that's still going to maintain along with the traditional pay-per-view. So smart for them, I think. You know, pay-per-view isn't as dying an industry as the WWE makes it out to be, but it is hurting. I mean, I just saw some numbers for UFC. Not all that impressive. I mean, yeah. 300,000 buys for Ronda Rousey, 300,000 buys for I want to call him Roy Jones, and it's not Roy Jones.
Boxer?
Mayweather? Not Mayweather. The champion for them, John Jones. I got Roy Jones in my head, the boxer Roy Jones Jr. But so he only drew about 300,000. So you know, pay per view is not dead yet, but it's not looking that great. Although you mentioned Mayweather, and we don't talk boxing on this show, but I mean Mayweather seems to have found the secret to just being able to draw.
It's because he's undefeated.
Yeah, it is. I think once he's not, the whole aura goes away. Because Mayweather is the type of guy, and even in a wrestling context, because we did see him in a wrestling context, but his character as a boxer fits so well into the wrestling landscape because he is this cocky, arrogant, flaunts his money character that you either love him or you absolutely despise him, but either way, you're going to watch him.
Exactly. But then again, if he loses, he's just another guy.
Yeah, but the thing about Mayweather that I find fascinating, and wrestling rarely has this, where it doesn't matter who he faces. I don't know who the guy was he fought at all. But you know what? I was watching anyway because of Mayweather. And it's that kind of drawing power that, you know, it extends beyond amazing. Like, there are very few guys in wrestling you can say that about. I think The Rock, you put him in there with anyone, people will watch. Stone Cold Steve Austin, Hulk Hogan, John Cena to some extent. But the list is very short.
Yeah, it's never the opponent. It's always about the main draw. And in boxing, it's Mayweather.
Yeah, but it's just the fact that the matchup isn't the draw. It's the actual person.
Yeah.
And I think wrestling really has very few characters that are like that. And that's tying this all back to finish this episode up. That goes back to why there's so much concern about what's going on for Daniel Bryan, because he isn't that guy yet.
He's not, and if they continue down this path with him and Brie and Kane, it's not going to be doing him any favors.
Yeah, like Daniel Bryan still needs a strong matchup to get, like, he has his fans, and obviously that's true, but to bring in the casual fans to buy into Daniel Bryan, he needs the matchup too. He's not to that point that he draws just, oh, here's Daniel Bryan, and he's wrestling in the main event. No, we need to know who he's wrestling still.
But he's kind of gone through all of those top names. Like, he had his deal with Wyatt, and he beat Cena for the title at SummerSlam. Those two will fight again down the road. Triple H and the Authority fell to him at WrestleMania, so it's kind of like, all right, if you want the fans to take him seriously as that main event guy, you're going to have to probably bring in somebody from the outside, right? Like, I mean, would Bryan versus Rock work? I mean, are we going to get Brock Lesnar versus Daniel Bryan? Would those work in elevating him?
Oh, sure, they'll work, but eventually it's got to get to a point where he's the draw, and even though he's went through the people he's went through, he's not there yet. And that's why until he gets to that point, and that takes years. Like, that's not something that happens overnight. That takes years. I mean, John Cena didn't just be John Cena. Like, if you look at the early parts of his career, it took years to get him to that point. And the same has to be true for Daniel Bryan, and that means booking him strong and keeping him strong. I'll tell you, we'll end on this. The WWE is doing a much better job protecting Roman Reigns than they are Daniel Bryan.
Yes, absolutely.
Like, Roman Reigns, they think can be that guy. The WWE believes he can be that guy. They never believed Daniel Bryan was that guy. They believe Roman Reigns can be that guy, and you can tell in the way he is treated in every single match since he has come up from NXT. He has been treated as something special and something different, and is always, always booked strong.
It helps the fact that he looks the way he does as well, and his lineage is also a nice bonus.
It is, and I mean, he's got the... I forget who says this line all the time. It might be a Jim Cornette thing, and if it is, that kind of turns me off to using it. But now, nonetheless, you want a babyface champion who the girls want to be with, guys think is cool, and kids like. That's how you draw money. And Roman Reigns is all that.
That's for sure. Unless Brian grows a couple of feet and grows his hair out and starts howling to the moon. I mean, that would help his cause.
Well, no, I think Daniel Bryan, Daniel Bryan is in the vein of a CM Punk. He's a self-made story. And people can get behind that too, but it takes a lot of work, and you've got to be careful because it can fall apart really quickly.
Yes. With Reigns, it's different because he has that natural charisma to him and that natural look to where you can just, like, flip a switch and you can put him in, like, that main event picture. You still have to handle it correctly like you would with Bryan, but it's easier with somebody like Reigns.
And he's protected. He's protected even within that group. The two guys around him are not chopped liver. Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins in their own right are tremendous talents. I think could be main event talents in this company as well. I think the three of those guys, I've said it in a previous podcast, I know I have, I think that storyline will maintain through history. Just like a DX is maintained through history, just like other factions have maintained through history, you will always go back to that Shield dynamic at different points along the ride.
I can't wait to see what all three of these guys do on their own, but it looks like we're going to have the Shield stick around for a little bit longer, but I am not complaining about that.
No, it's a good thing because you're establishing that foundation and that relationship, and that's why it will last, because people will remember it. They will be legitimately upset when it does fall apart, and they will pick sides, and when those sides come back together, that will make magic, and that is some tremendous booking. And, you know, credit to all three guys, because they're not just being booked well, they're delivering every single time they step to the plate, even when things aren't given to them. Like, we talk about guys who complain a lot, like Dolph Ziggler and others on this roster, but you know what? The Shield didn't exactly get a great WrestleMania match. You didn't hear them complain about it, did you?
No, sir.
They just rolled through who was put in front of them, and we're on to the next thing, and that's what you got to do.
Exactly. Well said.
All right. I'm off to have a fun-filled wrestling weekend, and I don't know what will curtail of that, but I will report back on all the fun or trials and tribulations I had at Global Wars and a local show here in Hamilton, where a bunch of ROH people are going to be on. Kevin Steen, Michael Elgin, Jimmy Jacobs, who knows? I mean, ROH was just down the street the night before, so who knows? Some other people they haven't advertised might show up at that show. You never know. And that's in Hamilton, and $20 at the door, 222 Queen Street. That isn't sold out. Well, but Global Wars is.
Well, enjoy the show, James.
And, shows, plural.
Shows, exactly. And let us know how they went next week on the podcast. Something to look forward to, as always, for all of our listeners.
Indeed. And maybe, you know, maybe Kevin Steen will have me on the Weekend Escapades. That would be just tremendous.
Ooh, that would be nice.
Never know. Hopefully.
Ha ha.
So that's it, folks. As I dream of being on the Weekend Escapades, we bid you adieu, and we will talk more wrestling from WWE, ROH, and...
the cream of the crop! Nobody does it better!
More questions!
I'm sorry about that.
Goodbye!